So ready to join me on the line today. He's a guy that makes my job a lot easier because rather than badgering him with question after question, you can just sit back and listen to this guy paint the picture and tell you the whole story about football, about life down in South America in general. He is one of the most eloquent journalists that I think we've ever had on this show, and he's a guy that if you don't know about South American football, 10 minutes with him and you'll think you'll know it all already, and then we're still not touching the surface of his knowledge. He is the BBC's very own Mr. Tim Vickery, joining us on the line today. Tim, how are you, mate? How are you after the closeout of the Confederations Cup final? First and foremost, I want to get your views on how it's gone. How has it been for the Brazilian people?
Well, that was a 2 weeks that was, wasn't it? An extraordinary time to be alive, and a fabulous time to be a football supporter, and perhaps an even better time to be a journalist, because the competition, I think, on the field has been better than anyone expected and more dramatic than anyone expected. But the events off the field, I think, have been even more significant. And we're living in fascinating times.
It's been a tournament, as you say, that's had so much off the field as well as on the field. Off the field, it's been chaotic at times. It's been distressing to watch. Has on the field done enough to sweep maybe off the field's kind of negativity under the rug slightly at all after Brazil storming past Spain yesterday evening?
Well, I disagree that what we're seeing off the field is negativity. I think this is a hugely optimistic moment for the country. All right, there are violent excesses, and that's lamentable, but that's part of the process as well. That comes with it. But really, on the Brazil of May 2013 has gone, and those youngsters, because it is mainly youngsters who've been at the forefront of the protest movement, they've already brought about significant change in their country. They've put public transport firmly on the political agenda, which is a wonderful, wonderful thing in this country, because public transport has been neglected for decades. They've got billions and billions of dollars now on the table for public transport. They've got immediate improvements to the health system, more resources for education, a harder line against corrupt politicians. So this wave of street protests, I think, has been overwhelmingly positive. And right now, moving on to the less important, because as the great phrase has it, of all the unimportant things in life, football is the most important, but that still makes it less important than public services. Scolari, Brazil's coach, is a wise old bird. He knew how to take advantage of the moment and create a bond between the team and the terraces. So it's been a really emotionally charged couple of weeks in Brazil.
And the emotion almost coming to boiling point, if you will, in that national anthem last night. That was something I don't think many of us have ever really witnessed or seen in watching a football game in a pre-match build-up. It's just an incredible atmosphere around the Maracanã.
Yeah, and this happened, the first time was for the second game in Brazil's tournament against Mexico, where I think it's only 90 seconds or something that FIFA allow for the anthem, and Brazil's anthem goes on and on and on forever. So it always seems a little bit strange when it stops after 90 seconds. Protesters, and this is the history of in Brazilian protest, the protesters very, very often sing the national anthem. So when the national anthem stopped in that second game against Mexico, I think in Fortaleza, and the crowd kept on singing, that was, because it hadn't been done before, that was really, really powerful. And that was certainly a contributing factor in Brazil coming out like a train in the first 15 minutes of that game. Happened again, and the same thing happened again on the field against Italy in Salvador. Happened again in the semi-final in Belo Horizonte against Uruguay. Then the emotional mix in football terms was totally different, because suddenly from a group game that you could afford to lose, you were then pitched into a semi-final, and it was very, very tense. You got the feeling in that semi-final that for a while, Brazil, rather than being inspired, were a little bit intimidated. You could kind of see them looking around the crowd and thinking, well, you know, we might let all these people down. But the emotional tone of the final was very, very different. Once again, it inspired Brazil straight out of the blocks, and a goal up within 2 minutes.
It was the ideal start for the Brazilians, and they made it so difficult for Spain to get any sort of a foothold getting back into this one. Were you surprised just how easily Spain were able, were submissive to the Brazilians in that game yesterday?
Well, firstly, if you're going to take on Spain, and someone asked me before the game, how do you beat Spain? And I said, well, make them play their semi-final a day later at the other end of the country and make sure it's in extreme heat and it goes 120 minutes. So from a physical point of view, it was a good time, I think, to take on the Spanish. But also, you know, I think deep down, Scolari never really rated them very much. And a few months ago, he gave an interview when he named his World Cup favourites, and he didn't include Spain amongst them. And I think he's always felt that given a chance that Brazil would be able to impose themselves on Spain, that Brazil's physicality and pace, would they be able to block Spain down the midfield and launch their own moves down the flanks. So I think Brazil, going into this game, even had it been in normal conditions, I think Brazil would have been really up for it. But with the political moment, the national anthem, and the fact that Spain weren't 100%, I think Brazil were very, very confident of victory even before the game.
You talk about the physicality of this Brazil side, and of course, you know, you'll look at someone like Thiago Silva, who's such a big presence in that back four, but his centre-back partner, David Luiz, as well. This is a guy that 2 years ago, when he joined the Premier League, was being criticised week in, week out for his positioning, for his performances, for his effort level. In this tournament, especially in a Brazil shirt, and of course last season, he's come on leaps and bounds, it seems, from that guy who was getting chastised in the media in the UK.
Yeah, and that commitment that he gives has made him almost a symbol of the side, I think, in a way. He's still reckless. He still makes mistakes. You're still, from a Brazil point of view, very, very grateful for the calm head and the covering of Thiago Silva, who I think is probably the most important player in the team. Interesting from a Scolari point of view, because many of these players he inherited. And I think that there should be some tribute paid to his predecessor, Mano Menezes, who got a hard ride. But he bloodied most of these players. And also some of that high-pressure marking in the opponent's half, that was him who introduced. But Scolari will be feeling very pleased with himself, because the picks that he's made, he brought back Julio Cesar in goal. He brought back the figure of the centre forward and went with Freddy up front. And he's consolidated Luis Gustavo as a holding midfielder. So you've got that right down the spine of the side. You've got the goalkeeper, holding midfielder, centre forward. Three Scolari picks, all of whom have done wonderfully, wonderfully well for him in this tournament. In fact, I think if Scolari would have one complaint, it's the things have gone too well. A month ago, the Brazilian public were very, very sceptical about their team. But this is a country of extreme reactions. And now the Brazilian public will think they're unstoppable. And this might raise the bar in terms of next year. And it might end up making things harder for them. So I think in a perfect world, I think Scolari would have wanted a victory, but not such a convincing one as the one that we saw last night.
How does he go about doing that? How do you put a lid on this celebration right now, especially when a lot of it was led by this such an iconic young player in Neymar and the performances that he's put on as well? It is boiling over, as I said, off the pitch and on the pitch.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to know what he can do with the supporters. His mission is accomplished, really, on that mission of from the Confederations Cup, of winning the fans over all over the country. He's done that. In fact, he's probably done that too well for his own good. But one of his key tasks now will be the emotional control of his own team, making sure that they keep their feet on the ground. And most times that Brazil have won the World Cup, they've gone into the tournaments with people not really sure about them. When they've swanned up thinking that they're going to win easily, that's usually when they've fallen on their backsides. Now, Scolari knows this. He knows the dangers of the comprehensive victory of yesterday. He knows that the World Cup is not going to be like that all the time. You know, I mean, as he said in the Uruguay semi-final, he said after the game, you know, that at no point in the game and until the final whistle could he really guarantee that Brazil were going to win. And that was a tense struggle. And, you know, the World Cup is such a cruel competition. You can be playing very, very, very well. And then suddenly it doesn't even take a bad game or even a bad half. It can be just a bad spell in a half, you know, one refereeing decision or something like that, and it can be all over. So one of Scolari's key tasks, and he's brilliant at it, is controlling the emotional level of his players and making sure they don't get too carried away with what happened on Sunday.
Does it make it easier or more difficult for Big Phil to keep a lid on it? The fact that these players don't play with each other week in, week out. We've talked about Spain and how their dominance as an international force, a lot of it could derive from the fact that Barca and Real Madrid, that's where the majority of their players come from. The fact that these Brazil players are spread out all over the footballing spectrum, does that make it easier to kind of take their level down a bit because they all get split up and broken apart once they're out of that Brazil team kind of locker room?
Well, what he is, Scolari, is a great tournament coach. And he'll have those players together for a couple of months next year, and assuming that they go all the way in the World Cup final, he'll have them from kind of late May all the way through to early July. So that's when, obviously, the friendlies that he's got till then. He's only got one friendly date, one FIFA date next year. He's got a few this year. He doesn't have that much time with his players between now and then, which made the Confederations Cup so vital. It was the month that he wanted to come out with a consolidated side. So in a certain way, things are kind of on hold until the group meet up again at the end of May next year. And then I'm sure he'll whip them into shape during the course of that tournament. He'll feel that he'll have long enough with them then to get them at the emotional level that he wants.
Is there any of this playing into the hands of the other South American sides, in particular Argentina, in their preparations for the World Cup? Everybody's obviously looking at Brazil, looking at what they've done over the last 2 weeks, looking at obviously Spain as well, who have been so dominant, and Italy that have played well. Argentina just going through the motions of World Cup qualification, and does it take any pressure off them now going into that World Cup and put them in a position that, as you said so yourself, that Brazil kind of have thrived on when they've gone into tournaments of, you know, not too many people talking about them?
Yeah, one comparison that we could make, and it's not an exact comparison, but I think it's pertinent enough, is the final of the Confederations Cup in 2005 in Germany, when it was Brazil and Argentina in the final. And it was an understrength Argentina side. They'd taken a kind of experimental squad to the tournament. It was an Argentina side that were on their feet physically, on their knees physically, because their semi-final had gone to extra time and penalties. And still Argentina, it was the Riquelme side, being Argentina, that they came out to play. And they played right into the hands of Brazil's counter-attack. And Brazil picked them off on the break and thrashed them 4-1. That, you might remember, was the start of all the hoo-ha about the magic quartet and this fabulous collection of attacking talent that Brazil had. And the idea in Brazil was that all this team had to do was turn up and FIFA would have to hand over the World Cup a year later. That game, I think it threw Brazil on and through the public and perhaps even through the coach, Pajera, through on the wrong track, because that game was so different from what the World Cup was going to be. You know, and come the World Cup, you weren't going to see experimental sides, and you certainly weren't going to see many sides who were going to push forward against Brazil and play into the hands of their counterattack. That's the danger, I think, of Sunday, that people use the Spain game as a template for what the World Cup will be, because it certainly won't. It won't be anything like that for Brazil. Sides will get men behind the ball. They will seek to neutralise Brazil's pace. And they will look to themselves to hit Brazil on the break. That's a challenge that Scolari knows. That's a difficult challenge for his team. And he's saying that, that sometimes when we come up against teams like that, there's just no space to play in and we're struggling to create. Now, during the course of this Confederations Cup, they've been in like this state of grace. You know, they've got early goals or, you know, Neymar's shots have just flown in. Everything has just flown into the corner. There will come a time during the World Cup where things will be more difficult, where that shot, instead of flying in a corner, that shot will go wide, where they go behind. We haven't seen them go behind in this tournament. And the test of any team is, how do you react when you go behind? And how will Brazil react if they go behind in one of the knockout rounds of the World Cup? With all of that pressure on them, how will they react emotionally to that? And perhaps another point to make where they could go wrong is on the number of fouls that they're committing, which is part of a plan, I think. It's part of what Scolari does, and he's also worried about playing into the hands of the opposing counterattack if his side are pushing up. His side are consistently committing many more fouls than the opponents. And Del Bosque, the Spanish coach, acknowledged Brazil's superiority after the game, but he did complain about the amount of times that the rhythm of the team was stopped by Brazil fouling in midfield. And the players who are most fouling are Neymar and Oscar, which is significant, because these are players in that first line there where their presence at the source of the opposition's counterattack. So part of their job is to stop that counterattack by any means possible. And so there is a problem of accumulated fouling and perhaps picking up cards. And Neymar was taken off with more than 20 minutes to go against Italy, because really he was very lucky not to have seen a red card already. So all of these things are things which could go wrong this time next year. And it's difficult to see everything going as right for Brazil as it did in that 90 minutes against Spain, because you know we were just a few inches away from 1-1 when David Luiz did that fantastic clearance, and then a minute later it's 2-0 and game over. You know, and games can take different turns, and there will be a time during the World Cup, because the World Cup's obviously a much longer competition than the Confederations Cup. There will be a time when Brazil are caught in winds which are less favourable than the winds that they've had during this Confederations Cup.
As a just final question, Tim, before we let you go, as an overall contest, this is obviously the build-up for the World Cup for next year in terms of a preparation for the hosts. And we've seen, as we talked about earlier, the protests on the streets and the heavy-handedness of riot police used on occasion as well. As a preparation for the country as a whole, Is this a Brazil that's going to be able to host a World Cup? Because it's still a question that is being asked still by the world's media.
Well, I think the World Cup will go ahead, but I'm pretty sure that we're going to have problems. Because, as I was saying earlier on, the government have made lots of concessions on almost every area that the protesters are complaining about. But the one area where you can't see where they can make concessions is the public spending on the 2014 World Cup. You know, that money's been spent. And Brazilian society was explicitly lied to with the claim back in 2007 that all the money spent on stadiums would be from private sources. It hasn't worked out that way at all. It's clear that the World Cup has cost more to Brazilian society than it should do, and is giving back less to Brazilian society than it should do. So it's pretty obvious, I think, that the World Cup will be this time next year. It will be at the front line of the protest movement. And that's really going to stretch, I think, the security forces. And if there's one quick story that I can give you, a car dealership in Belo Horizonte near the stadium. That stadium staged three games in the course of the competition. The first game, that car dealership had one of its glass windows broken. The second game, it had all 30 glass windows broken. The third game, they boarded everything up, and it didn't do any good. The whole place was trashed. Some of the protesters got inside, burnt some of the cars. While this was happening, the people from the car dealership phoned the police and said, look, we're in trouble here. And the police said, sorry, we can't do anything for you. We can't spare any manpower. All of our manpower is dealing with the front line of the protest, where they're trying to storm the stadium. So that's the worry for the World Cup, that you multiply all of this by the difference between the World Cup and the Confederations Cup. You know, not seven visiting teams, but 31. Not a handful of visiting supporters, but some 600,000. No doubt about it, the security forces will really, really be stretched by the demands of Brazil staging the World Cup.
Is it down to FIFA, or is it down to the government? Because a bidding side does have to make so many concessions to accommodate for FIFA and what they ask from a World Cup and European Championships host. Where's the majority of this blame, if you will, going to be going, without kind of pointing fingers too blatantly, because it's obviously a very unclear-cut situation?
I think it's on both. And there's more heat and more spotlight than ever before on that relationship between FIFA and the host nation, you know, where FIFA make a fortune, because it does seem such a one-sided deal. You know, FIFA make a fortune from TV sales. It's a kind of no-risk thing from them. They make all kinds of demands on the host nation, which, if it's in a developing world, obviously has many competing claims on the public purse. But most of the blunders have been Brazilian blunders, to be honest. Blunders from the Brazilian government, who I think organised, and this this has been going off the rails for years and years and years, and the chickens have come home to roost, and no one really saw this coming, this protest movement coming. But to be honest, it's been coming for years, because the way that they've done the 2014 World Cup and allocated resources and organised the thing really has been deeply, deeply unsatisfactory. And it's an interesting relationship now, I think, between FIFA and the Brazilian government, because Blatter, Sepp Blatter, FIFA's president, he gave an interview in Brazil Sports Press yesterday when he kind of blamed the Brazilian government. He said that they've had years to do the infrastructure projects and they haven't done them. So it's a little bit of past the past at the moment, which I suppose you can't blame them when you can hear that parcel ticking.
It's still going to be a very bizarre situation, I'm sure, that will be continuing all the way through to the 2014 World Cup next summer. Tim, we hope that you at least can be around and be joining us still from South America for the World Cup next summer. And of course, we'll be checking in with you throughout next season as well, with the Copa Lib, with the rest of the South American qualifying to take place as well, mate. And we always appreciate you taking some time out to join us and enlighten us about South American football.
My pleasure as always. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Mr. Tim Vickery from the BBC, joining us here on World Football Daily to talk all things South American football. Tim giving us his unprecedented amount of knowledge.